Text 35 from Canto 5, Chapter 5. This is the last verse in the chapter, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. And it's a prose verse, so it's not on the board. It's really long, and I'll try to stumble through it a little bit. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 35. Itinana yoga charan charano Bhagavan Kaivalya Patirishabha Virata Parama Mahanandanubhava Atmani Sarvesham Bhutanam Atma Bhute Bhagavati Vasudeva Atmano Avyavadhananta Rodhara bhavena siddha samastartha paripurno yogaishvaryani vaiharyasya mano javat tardhana prakaya pravesha dura graha nadini yadidrichchaya yopa gatani nanjasa nripa. Difficult. Hridayenabhya nandat. Translation. Oh, King Parikshit, just to show all the yogis the mystic process, Lord Rishabhdev, the partial expansion of Lord Krishna, performed wonderful activities. Actually, he was the master of liberation, and fully absorbed in transcendental bliss, which increased 1,000-fold. Lord Krishna, Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, is the original source of Lord Rishabhdev. There is no difference in their constitution, and consequently Lord Rishabhdev awakened the loving symptoms of crying, laughing, and shivering. He was always absorbed in transcendental love. Due to this, all mystic powers automatically approached him, such as the ability to travel in outer space at the speed of the mind, to appear and disappear, to enter into the bodies of others, and to see things far, far away. Although he could do all this, he did not exercise these powers. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 19.149, it is said, Krishna Bhakti Nishkam Ataiva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. The word Shanta means completely peaceful. Unless all one's desires are fulfilled, one cannot be peaceful. Everyone is trying to fulfill his aspirations and desires, be they material or spiritual. Those in the material world are Ashanta, or without peace, because they have so many desires to fulfill. The pure devotee, however, was without desire. Anyabhilasha to shunya. A pure devotee is completely free from all kinds of material desire. Karmis, on the other hand, are simply full of desires because they try to enjoy sense gratification. They are not peaceful in this life, nor the next, during the past, present, or future. Similarly, gyanis are always aspiring after liberation and trying to become one with the Supreme. Yogis are aspiring after many siddhis, or powers, anima, lagima, prapti, etc. However, a devotee is not at all interested in these things because he is fully dependent on the mercy of Krishna. Krishna is Yogeshwar, the master, the possessor of all mystic powers, or siddhis, and he is Atmarama, fully self-satisfied. The yoga siddhis are described in this verse. One can fly in outer space without the aid of a machine, and he can travel at the speed of the mind. This means that as soon as a yogi desires to go somewhere within this universe, or even beyond this universe, he can do so immediately. One cannot estimate the speed of the mind, for within a second, the mind can go many millions of miles. Sometimes yogis enter into the bodies of other people and act as they desire when their bodies are not working properly. When the body becomes old, a perfect yogi can find a young, able body, giving up his old body. The yogi can enter into the young body and act as he pleases, being a plenary expansion of Lord Vasudev. Lord Rishabhdev possesses all these mystic powers, but he was satisfied with his devotional love of Krishna, which was evinced, demonstrated, by the ecstatic symptoms such as crying, laughing, and shivering. Thus then, the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, fifth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings to His Sons. In the Sanskrit, because it's not in a verse form, it's in the prose form, which makes it a little more cumbersome. Vasudeve Atmanaha Avya Vadana indicates he's not different than Krishna. Avya Vadana, by the non-difference of constitution. But it's also described that he's Bhagavat Kala. What does Kala mean? Kala. Prabhupada translates it as a portion of a plenary portion. So it's not a plenary portion, but a portion of a plenary portion. Elsewhere it's called a partial expansion. Ete changsa kala pungsan krishnas tu bhagavan. So he's an avatar, a kala, a portion of a plenary portion of Vasudev. So we can say non-different, as it's stated here. We can say different. Because consider what's being said here. It's like Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and Rishabhdev is Bhagavat Kala, a portion of a plenary portion, or partial expansion. The Purusha avatars are in the same category. Same type. Kala. So he's Vishnu Tattva. Sometimes there's this, you know, is Rishabhdev Jiva Tattva or Vishnu Tattva? At least the indication here, I've seen other references that indicate he's an empowered incarnation of one amongst the empowered incarnations. But empowered incarnations can also be Vishnu Tattva. Quiz question. What's an example of Shakti Vaishnava avatar that's in the category of Vishnu Tattva. We'll do it the other way. What's some examples of Shakti Vesha Avatar that are Jiva Tattvas? Vyasadeva, literary incarnation. Four Kumaras, Jnana Shakti. Narada Muni, Bhakti Shakti. Anyone? Huh? Prithu Maharaj, Palana Shakti. So, they're jivas who are in the category of Shakti Vesha Avatars. Lord Kapila is another example. I don't know which adjective goes with him, but in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, it's described. He's a Shakti Vesha Avatar. So, what's an example of a Shakti Vesha Avatar that's Vishnu Tattva? Anyone? No. Yeah? As far as I know, no. The example that's commonly given is Anantashesh. Vishnu Tattva, Shakti Vesha Avatar. He's fulfilling a particular function. This is what's in teachings of Lord Chaitanya and also taken from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know. Maybe. Garuda. There's something very unique about Garuda. There's, I mean, a number of things very unique about Garuda. So I don't know. So Rishabhdev is Vishnu Tattva, Bhagavat Kala. And it as indicated in the verse also. And in the translation, Lord Rishabhdev, the partial expansion of Lord Krishna. So while he's the partial expansion of Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, he's experiencing and he's exhibiting symptoms of a devotee of Krishna. Far out, huh? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically, unlike Rishabhdev, well, he's Krishna himself, but he's also accepted the mood of his own internal potency, Radha. Not a description here of exactly how does this work, that he's an incarnation. Like, let's say, Balaram, he derives happiness from serving Krishna. And he serves Krishna in so many, 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 many different ways. And by serving Krishna, he's deriving happiness. But he's not a portion of a plenary portion. He's a direct expansion, svangsa expansion of Krishna. As a, for example, so Rishabhdev is a kala experiencing happiness in relation to the personality of Godhead. And his services, he's performing some leelas and giving some teachings, just as the chapter heading indicates. And this verse is speaking of how he's teaching the mystic yogis. He's teaching the mystic yogis as he was teaching his sons about detachment. He's teaching the mystic yogis about detachment. Because of his ecstatic mood, it's said in the verse and the translation that he was always absorbed in transcendental love. Due to this, all mystic powers automatically approached him. Doesn't say that he underwent some very arduous, complicated, subtle, sophisticated procedure to develop mystic powers. He just developed love of God, or love of himself. And the mystic cities approached him and identifying them, but he was not interested. So he was teaching, as he was teaching his sons, because that's the beginning part of this chapter, here he's teaching the mystic yogis. Just to show all yogis the mystic process, where cities come, but you're not interested in them. Not perform some practice so you can get some mystic cities. You hear the difference, right? One is detachment and the other is attachment. And where there's detachment, one can be peaceful. And when there is attachment, one isn't peaceful. Prabhupada explains, when there's desires to be fulfilled, then one's not peaceful. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale ashanta. This is Mahaprabhu speaking. The verse is quoting him. By pursuit of desire, other than the desire to serve Krishna, these others are material desires. Even the mystic siddhis, we know this from Nectar of Devotion, right? Prabhupada analyzes each of the cities or a number of the cities, and what are they? They're material perfections. They're the same perfections that those that aren't subtle, the gross materialists, try to accomplish by gross means, a flying machine. And, you know, becoming very light and become very heavy in things. It's a material art that's subtle. It's explained, the yogis know how to manipulate subtle laws of nature. They're just laws of nature, and because their consciousness is subtle, they learn how to manipulate subtle laws, and they just move with those subtle laws of nature. It's gross material laws, subtle material laws. Behind the gross material laws, that are subtle material laws, and most people are gross, they don't recognize them. But a yogi, he aspires for them and develops sufficient concentration and sense and mind control enough so that these subtle laws of nature can be manipulated, and there he goes from one place to another place very quickly by one mystic power. It's described right in Prabhupada's purports. There are some mystic yogis that in the course of their morning bath, they can visit four or five different bathing ghats all over India. Just dip in the water, and next thing you know, they're emerging from the water in Prayag and, you know, Jamuna and Ganga, and they, you know, zoom, 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 there they go. Or that's in the water, but there's other, you know, in the air. So they're material perfections, and one who desires material perfections, whether they're the gross ones or the subtle ones, the mind doesn't remain peaceful. Rishabhdev was teaching the yogis, the real goal is not just you have the mystic cities, but you're detached from them. Whatever opulences are there, unless there's some facility in serving the personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited before Prakashananda Saraswati and his fellow sannyasis, perfections, mystic perfections, or, you know, one of his opulences, because they were attracted to Brahman, he exhibited his Brahman effulgence, just sitting by the foot bath area and lighting up the place like another sun. They were impressed. Ooh, look at this. But Prabhupada explains, commonly devotees don't do this because persons who see some mystic opulence, they may think, oh, let me take up devotional service so I can acquire and exhibit mystic opulence. And I can enjoy and people will adore me. And because the mentality of worldly people is not just, this is wonderful, this is amazing, but I want to follow the process so I can get that too. Anyway, Prabhupada gave that explanation. Devotees have at their disposal, pure devotees have at their disposal mystic powers. And they commonly don't display them as much as they don't display their mood of ecstasy before common people, because common people won't understand, so they hold that within. They experience that happiness within and not display that externally. When I was a very new devotee, like first year, and first summer in Krishna consciousness, I heard one very nice story of Prabhupada exhibiting amazing strength. For starters, Jitendriya, I think you'll want to hear this one. Jitendriya, you'll want to hear this Prabhupada story. Okay. Bury Place, London. So the first place where they had a little center. And they were setting up the altar. The deities were acquired in a pretty amazing way. And you heard the story of how the deities were acquired? You recall, Jitendriya? Something like that somebody, some family invited Prabhupada for a home program. I may have this mixed up with something else, but he was sitting in their living room like, and they had deities. And, Prabhupada is indicating this would be wonderful deities to have for our temple. And they said, oh, Swamiji would something. It's just like an indication it might be a very nice thing. So Prabhupada he indicated to his sannyasis, take the deities, and they got up and they walked out of the house, and they, just like, zoom, zoom, zoom. And Prabhupada was laughing in a way, something like that. And the people, they didn't know what to do. They didn't want to say, Swamiji, you just took our deities. They weren't worshiping them. They were like statues in the home, kind of like. So anyway, so then it came, they had deities, then they were going to make an installation. So they were building an altar. And, those days we didn't go and, to Bombay and wait, a few years for them to carve a Shringasan. They just did it themselves. Everyone was, those kinds of things. So they got some marble and they were trying to make columns and the canopy above the deities. And so they were getting ready to put the deities in their place. But they hadn't fastened the columns properly. And so there's this big marble thing over the deities. As they're placing the deities, it started to fall. And it would have broken the deities. So two virile, masculine, Western people tried to hold it up, but they couldn't. It was too heavy. Prabhupada came there and just like with it, because he's shorter. He just held it up and then instructed them to do this, do that, and do the other thing. And, so the deities were safe and Prabhupada just, shrugged his shoulders and, went on. But they were understanding he had powers beyond a normal person. He just didn't normally exhibit them. Anyway, a pure devotee has capacities for Krishna service that they're gifted directly by Krishna, is the point. And they may be beyond our comprehension. They are beyond our comprehension. But they exhibit them only for the purpose of Krishna's service, and not otherwise. Not otherwise. like, you know, Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. That was done for a number of reasons, but to give the opportunity of worldly, the Vrijvasis to see him nonstop for 7 days and to give protection to them. But it was also to show a worldly person, you know, you're God, then let's see you lift Govardhan Hill. Like that. So, Rishabdev had the capacity for these transcendental, mystic powers. He had the capacity for exhibiting mystic powers, but he exhibited disinterest in them. That's the lesson for the yogis. And in this way, his happiness wasn't interrupted by, well, let me try this one out, let me try that one out. The state of purification in Krishna consciousness. We're also engaged in a process just from chanting, where the chanting is very powerful, and the chanting can make one powerful. Now, if someone isn't complete in the process of purification, and there's some powerful something that comes from the process of bhakti yoga, the process of hearing and chanting, if the heart is not pure, one can become taranga rangini, one of the causes of or one of the categories of unsteadiness, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is to be an enjoyer of the little fruit of success in bhakti. So little fruit of success in bhakti comes and something comes. And then, oh, let me be the enjoyer of this. And then what happens? One falls from that position. The strength or the spiritual qualification leaks like holes in a bucket. The heart of a devotee, so this is because Prabhupada is taking it in the direction of not just what Rishabdev did, but what are we to understand about it from our devotional practice. It's the Purnar Mushika Bhava description. You know, the mouse who came to the yogi and said, oh, please help me. What's that? The cat. The cat is always chasing me, so can you make me a cat? The cat won't chase me anymore. Be a cat. Then the cat came back and, oh, there's a dog. The dog is chasing me. Okay, you become a dog. The lion is chasing me. Become a lion. So, if one takes the resources that come to one just from the performing devotional service, any one of us, look back at where we were. Don't spend too much time looking, but look back at where you were, and now what happened? Something happened. Something transformative took place. And how did that happen? It happened by the process of bhakti, by the descending mercy of our disciplic succession, and Krishna came into your life and our lives, and something very fortunate happened. Now, try to be an enjoyer of that something. Not good. But it happens because the enjoying, independent enjoying spirit is very strong. And that's there in the hearts of the yogis so what's missing? Krishna bhakti is missing.
So in our case, the attention needs to go to Krishna Bhakti. Like after, in the course of the evening yesterday, I won't mention names, that one devotee came and said, Maharaj, please give me your blessing that I can get more and more service. And I said, I'll make you a deal. You give me blessing that I get more and more service, and I'll give you my blessing that you get more and more service. How about that? Just, you know, a big embrace. And then I said, the real thing is, you want more and more service, just chant the Hare Krishna nicely. You'll get more and more service. You'll certainly get more and more chanting Hare Krishna, which is also a service. But you'll get more and more service. And not necessarily like more this way, but, you know, more the mood of service. And with that mood of service comes the facility for service. That's our mystic process, chanting Hare Krishna. And it's transformative. But in the interim between beginning chanting and, you know, the perfect stage of chanting, so many things come that one may try to be the enjoyer of. So many things come one may try to be the enjoyer of. Let your orientation be instead service. Mood of humble service. Let the chanting of the holy name strengthen that spirit. And this illustration of Rishabhdev, this last verse of the chapter, is pointing us in that direction also. He's the personality of Godhead. He can enjoy his opulences. He won't fall down. The yogis will fall down from their position. I wanted to just quickly read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks, or what he writes in his commentary, because there are a number of points that are the same. Some are a little different from what Prabhupada presents in his purport. He points to, the Kaivalya Patihi that's in the verse. It describes Rishabhdev as Kaivalya Patihi, which means that he gave merging in Brahman to others out of his mercy. Because of the yogis, a number of them, in addition to wanting mystic cities, they want to merge into Brahman. They want to merge into Paramatma. They want to become Paramatma. They got, you know, big time desires. One should consider that these pastimes are a meditation for teaching yogis. They are not to be imitated. Lord Rishabhdev was the Supreme Lord. He developed prema for Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, since Vasudev is the most worthy of worship among all the avatars. Interesting. And then he quotes Bhagavatam 1:9:19. Chapter 9 is Bhishma Dev, instructions to Yudhisthira. So text 19 is his rendering. There's in the first line, Asya Anubhavam. What does Anubhavam mean? The disposition or the feelings. So, O King, Yudhisthira. Lord Shiva, Narada the sage of heavens, and Lord Kapila, who is directly the Lord, know the most secret anubhavas of Krishna, though not his intentions. He's explaining, don't try to understand Krishna's intentions. And he's referring to these personalities, Narada, Shiva, Lord Kapila. They don't understand his intentions, although specifically they know his anubhavas. So similarly, Rishabhdev, the inference is, Rishabhdev also understands this most exalted, the avatari amongst the avatars of which I am one, he was, you know, ecstatic and appreciating the position of Vasudev and developed love for him. Interesting. The concept of many supreme lords is rejected, and thus the word Atmani in this verse is used in reference to Vasudev. So it's not that there's many lords. There's Krishna, there's Rishabhdev, there's this one and that one. That's, you know, this isn't polytheism. It's Atmani. He's the same. That's the indication. Rodara means giving tears. So he was, his ecstasy towards Vasudeva was ecstatic. Tears would appear. He was filled with prema, which produced unlimited tears, complete with all results directly manifested in himself, directed to Vasudev, Atmani, who is none different from himself, being his Amshi, like, you know, Avatar, Avatari, Angsa, Angsi. He's a Angsa or a Kala, a portion of Vasudev. What this verse is saying is, it's very deep. He was having ecstatic feelings towards Krishna as an expansion of Krishna. Rishabhdev was, he was up there. Very wonderful. So we'll go back, just for a moment, we'll go back to his teachings that are found in the first part of the fifth canto. And they're pretty intense, right? I mean, it's like there's no wiggle room in his teachings. It's very strict and strong. He says it very strongly. But to become qualified in spiritual life, we'd like to become qualified in Krishna consciousness, that not in like a stoic, mean, stern mood, be strict, like a strict disciplinarian that's got a big stick and whacks you when you don't do exactly the right thing. Not like that, not that kind of strict, but the other kind, you know, a very careful follower. And the principles in the beginning have to do with sense gratification, and there's no room for sense gratification if you're a follower of Rishabhdev, or if you're a follower of Bhakti. That's a qualification for making advancement, is be a strict follower. Again, not strict in the harsh kind of strict, but strict in the very careful follower. Then one can become spiritually qualified. And at the other end is this ecstatic love for Krishna. You know, we want the ecstatic love for Krishna, but not be the strict follower. Not gonna happen. So we go in steps to become qualified, and with the going in steps is directing our attention to Krishna and diminishing all the distractions that are all over the place. You know, at least indulging in them in the mood of being an enjoyer of them, up to these mystic perfections at the end of the chapter. But he's enjoying his mood of prema. That's his enjoyment. Tears, ecstasy. And disinterest. Viraktir anyatra cha. Detachment from all other things. Boy, did he exhibit detachment. Of a complete avaduta. But he is the personality of Godhead. There's Krishna, who is enjoying rasa dance, and there's Rishabhdev, who is an avaduta. And, you know, to the degree of abnegation of senses and, you know, concern with anything external. So the Leela is obviously starkly different, but here's the similarity, attachment to, for our edification purposes, attachment to the personality of Godhead. Different incarnations, like with Ram, different incarnations have a function. There's something very specific and unique about them. So Rishabhdev is exhibiting through his words and through his actions the stage of perfection. He's giving teachings. And that's why this chapter is so important. The beginning verses, I mentioned this when we were covering them, I remember discussing. In the Gurukula system, Prabhupada indicated that the children should chant these verses every day. And they would stand on the veranda of the Gurukula building and to the top of their lungs chant the verses. Deafening. But, you know, they learned the verses for sure. And the principle expressed in those verses, because it's coming from Rishabhdev, to achieve spiritual perfection. One who follows them can achieve spiritual perfection by his mercy. Okay, so, yes.
I have a comment, a question. A question I've had for a long time. My comment is that in Adi Leela, chapter 6, there is a similar message about the avatar society and the devotees of Krishna. Because there's a verse quoted in the Buddha Gita where Krishna says, any number of Shiva, Lord Brahma, Sankarsha, Vashna, or even myself is compared to me as you are Guru. So in the avatar, knowing this about Krishna, they desire to become devotees of Krishna. And so they descend as various devotees of Brahma. So I was wondering, I mean, I was about to have a listening session with many new guests.
Maybe you can have what? Go right ahead. Do you recall what the commentary purport says in that verse? Well, just one simple point. When Krishna, question. Why are there so many living entities? Why? What is the purpose of the living entities from Krishna's perspective? Answer. It expands his enjoyment. That is, the living entities have love for him, he has love for them, it expands his enjoyment. As above, so below. Why do, you know, man and woman get together and want to have a family to expand their enjoyment, because that's what Krishna does, and they're just imitating what Krishna does to expand enjoyment, and now they become the enjoyer of their family and Gugu Gaga and the whole thing. So Krishna is unlimited. It's not like once upon a time Krishna was looking around saying, gee, I wish there was some more enjoyment, so I'll make some living entities. It's not like that. Because living entities are eternal. It's just their expansions of Krishna's marginal potency for his enjoyment. Which, you know, turn it around. What's our position? Increase Krishna's enjoyment. That's why we exist. You know, just get it together to be meditating on Krishna's enjoyment. And then you've connected with yourself. So similarly, other expansions. What's their purpose? Krishna's enjoyment. And, you know, he enjoys, as we do because Krishna enjoys love, and so there's loving activity. So they do loving activity, and they enjoy that loving activity. As it comes from Balaram, the expansion of the mood of service. So if we can somehow get that understanding, like, you know, not just floating around, oh, that's an interesting understanding, what's next? But if we can internalize that understanding and live on that same principle, that's the means of entrance into the spiritual realm and, you know, the relief from being in this place. Just Krishna's enjoyment. And love for Krishna. Avatar?
Kata.
We
know that's one of the questions of the sages in the first chapter.
Yes. Yeah.
And also in Sanatana Shiksha, Mahaprabhu gives like a long description.
Long.
And it's really bewildering.
It's really bewildering.
And I was really quite confused about the chapter. This show is really better than I read it, but it still looks bewildering. My question is, why is knowing so much detail about the avatars so important for us?
It's a few things. It's like, let me tell you about my beloved. With like, what's that? There's this poetic phrase. Let me count the ways. Let me tell you of the glories of my beloved. Let me count the ways. There's this glory. There's that glory. There's the other glory. There are so many glories. It increases our love for Krishna. Like Prabhupada would say, some say God is great. How great they is, they do not know. So understanding the greatness of God or the science of God, it's not like, okay, here's a nice challenge. Let me apply my prowess of figuring things out to this system. Okay, I got that one down. It's not an intellectual challenge. It's a devotional experience of the glories, the infinite variety. But for purposes, because intelligence is to discern or discriminate this from that. So it's something like one appreciation of the Vedas is you just take any topic, pick a topic, and get into it, and you'll find within the Vedic wisdom, it's fathomless. You just go down and down and down, and it's like you can't find the bottom. Okay, I've reached the limit. There's no such thing. It just keeps going, like, you know, music. Just down, just go and go and go and go, or, you know, whatever it is. Whatever it is. Because that's Krishna. He's unlimited. I see your hand, Jitendra. I'm just still getting responding. So it's similarly with this position of avatars. Just to take your statement and amplify it, or question and amplify it a bit, Rupa Goswami wrote a whole book about it. Laghu Bhagavatamrita is just about the avatars of the Lord. It's kind of like, you know, a little slice of Krishna Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, which is like, why is Krishna God? There's all these different avatars and avatars and avatars and categories and, you know, Vaibhav and Prakash and, you know, If you think, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita description of to Sanatana Goswami is complicated. Woo! But it's like Krishna's unlimited. He's really unlimited. It's really unlimited. And that's just like a little, you know, a few waves in the ocean. And there's unlimited waves in the ocean. He's unlimited. So it's not so much. Is it important that I know, you know, in which hand the symbols of Vishnu are, which correspond with the name of, you know, which of Vaikuntha form of Narayan? Or the other things? I've gone over those, you know, not those, but the difference between Prakash and Swangsa, and, you know, my head spins. You know, you go through it again, go through it again. Just like, so I get a picture of it and go through it again, it doesn't stick. But there is this appreciation. There are those very, very elevated Vaishnavas that understand this science down pat, and there's variegatedness within the forms of the Lord, and Krishna is the source of them all. That's at least that much appreciation. Jitendriya. Krishna is what?
The expressions, the explanation of Krishna's pastimes, everything about Krishna's personality.
Everything about Krishna is so.
There's no end to it.
No end to it. Okay. Okay. You want to give an example of Krishna's endlessness?
Well, there was a verse I was reading.
All the atoms in the universe, or count all the atoms in the universe. If they could do that, still.
Well, then it goes on.
Yeah. Good one. Do you have any spiritual desires? Okay. And you're working to fulfill your spiritual desires? Good. So there's the answer. No. Material or spiritual, there must be desire. We're not beyond spiritual desire. Spiritual desire. Like the gopi, you know, the pure, you know, the residents of Vrindavan, they have spiritual desire. They want to serve Krishna. Hanuman, he has a spiritual desire. He wants to serve Ram.
That's what I was trying to understand.
Yeah, that's the point. But that's what it means. We can't be without desire. Whether it's spiritual or material, we can't be without desire. Everyone is working to fulfill their material or spiritual desires. We're not desireless. Doesn't exist. When we say desireless, it means without material desire, but with spiritual desire. That's how to understand what's written there. Something else. Examples? Okay, big demons. Okay. Their tendencies are pretty gross. So I don't get your question.
How is that possible?
How was what? How what's the contradiction?
To be so,
how can you be materially powerful and be a demon? Krishna makes it possible. How does anything happen? That's how it happens. Krishna makes it possible. They do things. They perform austerities to become powerful. Hiranyakashipu. Austerity to become powerful. So with that austerity to become powerful, they get something material that makes them materially powerful, but spiritually bankrupt. So it's not. There's no contradiction. I don't see the dilemma. Sure. Where does that ability come from? Matak matir gyanam apohanam cha. It's not, you know, Krishna is the father of all living entities, and, you know, one of them is one of these demons over here. And they have some desire, and Krishna's in their heart, he knows their desire, and they perform austerities, and he endows them with some capacity to do something demoniac. And then destroys them. I don't see a contradiction. Well, devotee also, like Arjun, battle of Kurukshetra, and then later in Dwaraka, protecting the queens. Where is his ability coming from? Krishna, and Krishna can take it away. Devotee, non-devotee, we're dependent. We're not independent. Devotees don't become independent. At least you shouldn't think that they can become independent. Yes.
The knowledge about Krishna is so vast.
Yes.
So much you learn.
Yeah. So don't be a gyani, you'll drown. Yeah. Your conditioned soul. Yeah.
So, are
you supposed to have an internal filter, did you say?
Yeah. Like, to discern this is love for me, this is not love for me, or what do you do?
Well, the if you recall back something that I was speaking about during class, is this going to help increase my devotion for Krishna? And then you ask yourself that question. Let's take an example, like something that I'm involved with presently is you know, this mountain called Sri Brahma Samhita. And I, you know, decided I want to climb the mountain. I want to understand what Jiva Goswami present, why Lord Chaitanya valued it so much. Prabhupada wrote in 1969, when Pradyumna found that the Gaudiya Math had Sri Brahma Samhita, Prabhupada wrote that, you know, all of my disciples should learn this book thoroughly, because it's a synopsis of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, and moreover, my spiritual master has written a commentary, so I would like my disciples to learn it thoroughly. But you know, there's this big barrier to learn it thoroughly. If, a number of them, but one of them is, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Like everyone just, you know, okay, I'll read that later. Let me read Chaitanya Charitamrita, or Leelamrita, or, you know, Amrita, but, you know, that's like, you know, how do you chew that one? So, in going into it, it's actually very, it's filled with rasa. But there are parts of it, it's just about material creation. Like, really deep stuff about material creation. So then, question. Do I have to learn that to, like, develop love for Krishna? It's asking the same question from a different perspective. Is this going to help me develop my devotion for Krishna, my love for Krishna, by learning all these things? Yeah, it'd be interesting to, like, figure out how you wiggle something over here and it wiggles something over there. How this is connected with that. The technology of how the universe works. And, you know, what does Lord Vishnu do, and what does Shambhu do, and what does Rama Devi do, and, you know, how does the whole puzzle fit together? It's not just it's like Sankhya. You know, Lord Kapila's teachings to Devahuti. She's his mother. She's a woman. What does she, you know, understand all about this process of creation for? But there's a purpose behind, Sankhya and a purpose behind this process of creation. It takes the sentiment of, like, hearing chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, you're not this body, and it really ramps it up to, you're not this body. You're not this body. It's not, and Krishna is so amazing. It's something similar to all these details of avatars. This is, Krishna is so amazing. The complexity is so amazing. But behind it all, there's Krishna tending cows in Goloka Vrindavan. And he's the source of it all. Because that's how it starts. That's how Sri Brahma Samhita starts. The commentary of Jiva Goswami goes in depth to why Govinda and why not Krishna. Because Govinda is very specific. He gives pleasure to the cows. Govinda. And that's the meditation of Lord Brahma. That's what Sri Brahma Samhita is. And there's all this stuff about creation. You know, the living entities and, oh, it's, there's four different aspects of Lord Shiva and their abodes, and, like, it's, you know, man, is it complicated. Is that going to help my Krishna consciousness? So, you know, of all the things that I can, back to your question, of all the things that are the unlimited things that I could possibly do to plunge in and learn about, Where do I put my energy or draw the line? What do I do and not do? How do I, like, narrow down the field a little bit? And the answer, something that will help your Krishna consciousness. And then also look something, what's your nature? Something that can be of useful service for the Prabhus or the Hare Krishna movement or the temple or something. And then move with that. And that becomes, at least for some period of time, it becomes your service, it becomes your life, whatever that is. So there's propensity, say psychophysical nature, there's a mode of service, that there's the keep always in mind, how is this going to help me awaken my dormant love for Krishna, my Krishna consciousness? Keep that in mind, and it'll help guide you to, you know, those few sets of things in mind, and it'll help guide you to something that will be very meaningful. And when you have something that's very meaningful, stay with it. At least for some time, and then after some time, some other feature of the unlimitedness may resonate particularly strongly. Maybe there's a need or something, and then those things that you did before aren't going to leave you. They're with you. That's part of what you can utilize in Krishna service. But stay always with, you know, the mood of wishing to serve Krishna pleasingly. Krishna at the center. Krishna is the enjoyer. And I'm the servant of the enjoyer, Krishna. Stay there. Let all the, whatever the decisions are made, nurture that one thing. You had something, Derek? Mystic cities, yeah? Yeah. Yeah. With emotions? That's, well, it, certainly. But, you know, a conditional certainly. Chant and be happy. Prabhupada wanted any person that has affection for another person wants to see that they're happy. But supposing, you know, so be happy and enjoy that happiness when you're in kirtan or whatever, you know, something that you really enjoy doing. Enjoy doing that. The conditional part is see it in relation to Krishna's happiness. Supposing, you know, Jai Jagannath is singing and he's, you know, the devotees are in the kirtan mood and his mind goes away from how Krishna is enjoying, and his mind goes to, you know, I have so many people following me and Krishna is giving me a nice voice and, you know, that kind of enjoying. Yuck. The bhakti just goes somewhere. And so stay in the mood of Krishna's enjoyment. My enjoyment is the happiness of love. So don't run away from the happiness of love, but don't become the independent enjoyer of the resources that Krishna gives. The independent enjoyer of the resources that Krishna gives, including happiness and other nice emotions. You know, the other emotions can also be ecstatic. I'll just share this one. I explained it over the weekend. But last weekend I was in Minneapolis, and I left on a Monday early morning to catch a flight to go to Boston to take part in some programs in Boston. What should have taken about 4 hours took about 10 hours. And there was tribulation in between. So I was describing this to one devotee, God brother, about the tribulations, and just laughing and laughing, and he was like really aghast about what Krishna turned me upside down, and then turned me upside down, and then turned me upside down, and then turned me upside down. And it was wonderful. And then, you know, the conversation we had, that was just sharing, and then the conversation was solving a problem together. And just there was, it's not fun to solve problems, but in service to Krishna, it's ecstatic. So we just went off on that one, you know, this is ecstatic. Just the mood of service is ecstatic. And then the devotee said, I wouldn't have it any other way. Because his life has been in a lot of different places, but I wouldn't have it any other way than just being engaged in Krishna's service. Whether it's, you know, sliding down the slope or climbing the slope. Whatever it is, it's ecstatic. It's fantastic. Krishna consciousness is fantastic. The happiness is not now I'm enjoying or now I'm, you know, I've got a problem I got to solve. Why is Krishna giving me so many problems to solve? I want to enjoy. Oh, now I'm enjoying. So it has nothing to do with any of that. And it's very easy to get, you know, off the center of the road and over on this side or that side of, you know, lamenting or wishing things were other than the way that they are, anyway, or trying to be the enjoyer of some facility that's come, independently. That's not Krishna consciousness. The tendency is strong, but it's not Krishna consciousness. Looking at the clock, I'm going to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.